what we're trying to do in the Art of Manliness is bring back this, what I call as a classical ideal of manliness. What I mean by that is the idea that of manliness that that started with the ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, and really was with us in the West until about the 1950s, 1960s, when a lot of the the social changes we had during that time. And what I mean by the classical idea of manliness is, you know, if you asked someone like on the street, like what in ancient Rome, or even in America in the 17th, you know, the 18th century, or someone in the 19th century, like what does manliness mean to you? And they would say things like, oh, well, being a man, or manliness means, you know, being a man of virtue, means being, you know, having strength, having, you know, not just physical strength, but also moral and intellectual strength, courage. Means having honor. It means being industrious. It means providing and contributing. That was another important. Like it was being a man in ancient Rome and even in America until fairly recently. Being a man meant you had to contribute to society. You had to be engaged in the public sphere and not think only about yourself. And to me that tastes good. That idea. Of manliness. And now when you ask guys, like, what does it mean to be manly? Like, they'll say dumb stuff like, oh, being manly means like sports and playing video games and like eating meat. And it's very manliness today is very self-centered. I feel like very narcissistic. And so we're trying to bring kind of revive this idea of manliness being something more positive, mm-hmm. Instead of sort of I guess it's more cartoonish what we have today.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Brett, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. We had you here back in the days when we were called Blogcast FM to talk to us about your site, The Art of Manliness. So, obviously that was almost 3 years ago. So a lot has changed since then. We have a ton of new listeners. So tell us a bit about yourself, your background, your story, and how that has led you to doing everything that you're doing today.
Sure. So that's a pretty broad question there, but I'm just an average. Like I grew up in a suburb of Oklahoma City, had a pretty average American life for a guy. I played football, all that stuff. And how I got started with the Art of Manliness was when I was in law school. This is back in 2006 or 2007, my second year of law school. One thing I'd always do whenever I'd go to like Borders or Barnes and Noble just to kill time, I would just go to like the men's interest magazine, the men's interest section of the magazine rack, right? So you have like Men's Health, Men's Fitness, Esquire, GQ, Maxim, FHM, I guess Stuff was around then too. Mm-hmm. And I would just like look at the magazines, right? And not buy anything, which is probably why Borders went out of business because people like me did that. But when I was in my second year of law school, I was just sitting there looking at the headlines and I just had this like, I don't know, this sort of like epiphany or not epiphany, peripatia, I don't know, whatever. Just like this, it's the same thing every month with these men's magazines. Like mm-hmm. It's always like how to get 6-pack abs, how to get hooked up with like 3 chicks this weekend. here's a babe, telling you like what she likes. And it's like, why do I care what this supermodel likes? Like I'm married. It doesn't interest me. And like, selling a lifestyle that I certainly couldn't afford as a in-debt law student. And so I'd been blogging for a little bit. Before this time, I had a blog called The Frugal Law Student, where I just kind of, it's like a personal finance blog and kind of law school advice study tip blog. And it done moderately well, not insanely huge. So I had some experience with blogging, and I decided, you know what, I want to start the men's magazine that I want to read. Mm-hmm. Like, I like this stuff. So I started kind of brainstorming, had my Moleskine pocket notebook, and I started like thinking of ideas and what I'd want, kind of articles I'd want in a men's magazine. And I started thinking about names for this men's magazine or a blog that I would want to, I'd want. Like, I had read this book called The Manly Arts, which is about bare knuckle boxing in the 19th century. And so I started came home, I was really excited, and I told my wife, and at the time my wife really didn't get blogging. She thought it was kind of, she read blogs, but you know, the idea of blogging was sort of, she's like, okay, why do you do this? And I was like, I got another idea for a blog. She's like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you know, you're in law school, you have the frugal law student, you know, focus on law school, you know, you gotta get a job after you graduate. This is a really great one. And like, she got really excited too. She's like, that's a great idea. So I started brainstorming ideas. Like, I think I'm going to call it the Manly Art. She's like, no, that doesn't sound too good. And I was like, how about the Art of Manliness? And she's like, oh yeah, that's great. So that's how the Art of Manliness was coined. And I bought the domain, installed WordPress, and I really didn't do anything. This is like fall of 2007. I couldn't do anything because I was in the middle of law school finals. And so I waited until Christmas break and installed WordPress, did the whole design by myself, which sucked because I wasn't a web designer. The idea of what Art of Manliness was just basically, I'm a big sucker. Not a sucker. I'd say I'm just inspired by the past, right? I love men. I mean, I'm just really inspired by men like my grandpa, World War II vet, forest ranger, and just a really cool guy. Mm-hmm. And I know like other men my age that I've talked to, like they feel the same way about their grandparents, their grandpas. They're just like, yeah, my grandpa's the coolest guy in the world. Like, he just knows everything. He just seems very confident. I want to be like my grandpa. So I was definitely, when I started the site, I wanted to sort of have that sort of nostalgic feel. So yeah, when you visit the site, it's, you know, got hardwood. It's got like the wood background, and all our photos are typically vintage. And we just talk about stuff that, you know, I was always drawn to as a boy and as a young man, like what it means to be a man. So like straight, you know, shaving like in a traditional way with like safety razors, straight razors, dressing well, but not in a very traditional way. I'm not very fashion forward. I'm all about just, you know, the blue, the navy suit, the charcoal suit, looking well, but not having to be fastidious about it. Because that was how my grandpa was, right? He dressed well, but he didn't spend hours in front of the mirror trying to, you know, get everything right. My grandpa wasn't peacocking. Let's mm-hmm. just say that. And then just sort of like skills, right? That I wish I knew, but I didn't, for some reason, didn't acquire while I was a young man. So things like, you know, building fires without matches, changing the oil in your car, you know, saddling horses. I mean, this is like stuff that like your grandpa like knew, right? So I started it, and I didn't think it was gonna be a business. Like I just started as more of a passion project, and it just blew up right away from the get-go. I shared it with my readers on the Frugal Law Student, and it just started getting passed around. And pretty soon I had a pretty big following, and I was like, man, this could be what I could do for a living. And yeah, so I mean, here we are. I guess like we're hitting 5 years into this, mm-hmm. or 6 years. And we have 13 million page views, you know, tens of thousands of email subscribers, lots of, you know, just a huge following, books that we've published based off of the site. And this is what I do for a living now. So yeah, I graduated law school and I didn't take the bar exam, and now I write about being a man.
Cool. All right. So a lot of stuff here that actually, you know, is really interesting. I want to go back to the very beginning.
Sure.
You know, you talked about walking in and having an epiphany. And, you know, this is a conversation that I've had with a few people, and a question that I've had is that some people are aware of when those moments occur, and others are not. And then of course, you know, there's one thing to you know that, hey, holy crap, I just had this epiphany, and it's another entirely to do something about it. So, I mean, I'm curious, is there something that you think people can do to develop that kind of awareness? Because I think people miss opportunities around them all the time. I mean, you could have walked into Borders that day and been like, ah, Maxim sucks, this sucks, screw it, I'm out of here. But yeah, you didn't, well, you know?
It's, yeah. I think that's, I mean, just writing stuff down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, I don't know, just the act of writing things down does something. Like your brain begins to trust you. I don't know. I know this is like completely woo woo stuff, and I completely pop to that, right? But like, I think your brain starts to trust yourself that, like, yeah, you're going to actually do something with these ideas that I'm spitting out at you.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just wrote everything down. Like I wrote ideas down all the time, and a lot of them, like, they didn't go anywhere, because like I was like, yeah, because like later on you're just like, you review your ideas, like, that sucks. But you know, when I felt good about the art of manliness. I was like, this is cool. I think this could be. And I know if I wasn't in that habit of like capturing ideas and like thinking about them, I probably wouldn't have that the whole idea of the art of manliness probably wouldn't have borne any fruit.
Is that something you still do today?
Honestly, no. It's pretty bad. I mean, I do capture ideas, like when I'm surfing the net, like I'll use Evernote,
uh-huh.
You know, whenever I read an article, you know, I'll save that to my notebook. But as far as just like when I'm out and about, because honestly, like I'm inside my house most of the day, cause I'm working and then I got kids.
Mm-hmm.
So like having a pocket notebook with me, I don't know. It's not that useful. And also I have my smartphone too. Mm-hmm. So like, I just use that. So, I mean, I do, but not as, I was pretty intense about it at the time. Cause like, this is like when I had first discovered Lifehacker and like all these life hack blogs when they were first starting out. And like, I remember I went crazy on that stuff. Like, this is amazing. I just did everything, full tilt. So yeah, I was really intense about writing down ideas. Not so much anymore. It's definitely a habit I need to get back into.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring it up. I mean, the reason I asked that question is because it's funny. Our friend AJ Leon says that, you know, he can trace back almost any project that he's shipped, which he's shipped amazing projects, to the pages of a notebook. And you know, it's funny because I've been going through my old Moleskins. I mean, and I have them stacked. I mean, it's funny because we've gotten so digital, we have smartphones, and I, you know, here I am, I'm like going back to pen and paper in a way that I never have before, and just really embracing it. And what I found is it does something really different for your creativity. But I think that the really bigger sort of point that you made was writing down, even though it sounds very kind of new agey, is that it does get, that something happens when you write something down. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but I mean, I can go back and look at a lot of the things that I see physical manifestations of in my life. And I can go back and look into the pages of a notebook and I'm like, wow, I wrote that down like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And these things happen. Well, you know what? I want to talk a bit about your entire creative process, if you don't mind, because,
sure.
I mean, you guys produce stuff that is at a level that's honestly above what many people do. I mean, you take your craft very seriously, and it's something I've always noticed about the way you guys do everything you do. It doesn't seem, you know, poorly put together. It looks like a lot of care and attention has gone into detail in terms of the content you publish, in terms of the way you guys show up. And I'd really love for you to talk about your creative process for how you produce such high quality work.
Sure. So it helps that oftentimes my wife and I collaborate on content together. You know, two heads are better than one. But yeah, you're right. Like, we take a lot of pride in the content we put out. You know, I feel like with a lot of people who are producing content, they're just trying to get stuff out there as fast as they can and put it out as, you know, as much as they can. And we're geared towards, like, we want to be as thorough and as useful as possible with our content. So we plan things out quite ahead in advance. And you know, if there's a topic that we want to hit, we will start reading about it, just reading, you know, not just one book, but like 4, 5, 6 books on the topic, you know, months in advance, and, you know, start taking notes, and outlining things and started hashing and having a back and forth conversation. And then one of us will, typically take the lead on a particular post. They'll write something up, then they'll spit it back to the other person. They'll add their fine-tunements to it, their input into it. And it just goes back and forth until it gets done. That's the creative process as far as producing content. So, sometimes we can spend just like a few days on a post, but oftentimes there'll be, weeks or even sometimes months of, work and research and organization into a post. We try to pass it on to our contributing writers, look, we're not looking for like just a 500 word article where you just sort of spout your opinion on something, your thoughts about something, because no one cares. And I think in the end, I don't care what some person's opinion. When I read something, I want to see that someone put thought, analysis, and research into it. We've thankfully found people who feel the same way about us that we do when it comes to in regards to putting out content. That doesn't say that every once in a while we'll like just spit something out like mm-hmm. in a day, because that sort of like in-depth, thorough writing and research, like it totally takes a toll on you. And so every once in a while you have to do something fun. We might do a whole blog series about the history of, masculine honor. And that was just a crazy, that was like crapping a pineapple, putting that out. But, then we'll do something like, how to throw an illustrated guide to how to throw a punch or how to survive falling through the ice, which, doesn't take that much time to put together, but it's fun. That's the creative process. And we're always capturing ideas. Mm-hmm. What's amazing whenever you research like we do is as you're researching for a particular, for a one post, you get ideas for other ones. So, I don't think we'll ever get to all the content we want to get to. Cause we just don't have time, to be honest. Cause we have like this notebook full of, just topics and posts we want to hit that we found. So that's the creative process for us. Mm-hmm. We're very workmanlike. We're not really into the whole inspiration struck me, so I'm gonna write this thing at 3 o'clock in the morning. I think it comes from our backgrounds. Like I have the law background. So, you're very, when you researched law review articles or researched for a client, you had to be very meticulous, thorough. My wife, has her master's in religion. She's very academic. So she has that same sort of workmanlike mentality when it comes to researching and writing.
Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is sponsored by Bombas Socks. Bombas are game-changing socks that have to be felt to be believed. They set out to rethink a product that is an afterthought for most of us. Athletic shoes have advanced tremendously in the last 20 years, but socks still look and feel exactly the same. So the team at Bombas spent 2 years researching and developing Bombas before sharing them with the world. And the result is a significantly more comfortable, quality-made, and better-fitting sock than anything else on the market. Some of the improvements known as Bombas Sock Tech include Blister Tab, an ankle cushion to prevent painful rubbing and chafing, Invisitoe, a hand-licked toe seam to eliminate that annoying bump on the toes, the Honeycomb Support System, which gives you extra support in the arch where you need it most, and a Performance Footbed, which gives you reinforced comfort that's not overwhelmingly thick. And because socks are the number one most requested clothing item at homeless shelters, for every pair you purchase, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. And if you don't love their socks as much as you think they will, they'll refund you, no questions asked. So visit bombas.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout. Again, that's bombas.com/creative and use the promo code creative at checkout. That's interesting. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody who approaches the creative process in such a sort of methodical way. I mean, I think everybody has their rituals for sure. You're right. You're very much workmanlike about it. I'm really curious. I mean, you see people around the web in general, like when you look at any artist of any sort, like masters of their craft stand out, and always, it doesn't matter what the craft is. And I'm really curious, I mean, if you're guiding somebody on this path of mastering a craft, I mean, what advice do you have for them? And how do you balance the sort of workman mindset with sort of the right-brained, you know, creativity and, you know, the signature, the thing that actually does make you unmistakable?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the advice I get to them is like, yeah, develop that workman mentality. Because there's so many people who don't have it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, why a lot of people fail, because they just think that, you know, the muses will just come to them and they'll magically just produce great stuff. But it doesn't work that way. You have to put in the work, and then that's when the magic happens. And as far as, you know, bringing in that right brain stuff, that right brain mentality, I mean, you just got to have fun with it, like not take yourself too seriously and not take the topic too seriously at times. You kind of be detached from it a little bit, so you can find places where you can have fun and, you know, inject some humor or just get creative. Because I know there's some people who just, they take things so seriously that they can't find rooms to be playful with it or experiment with it. So don't take yourself too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit. I mean, let's talk about this whole concept of the art of manliness, because I think there's a much bigger sort of narrative here than, you know, building a popular men's magazine. But I think in a lot of ways, I mean, what you guys do is a social commentary about what is going on with masculinity. And I think this is the more interesting part of your story to me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I also started the site because, look, at the time I was 25, 24 years old, and I was married, and I felt like, you know, I looked at guys that were my age, and like, they were just, a lot of them were just like, you know, they're just, I don't know, they were like still in high school, right? Mm-hmm. They weren't really, and you know, there's all this commentary about like why that is and whatever. And you know, what we try to do on the site, instead of like talking about the problems of men and what's wrong with men, I mean, I'd rather just focus on, like, here's what you can do. And you know, but occasionally we will talk about the history of masculinity, because I think that's important to know. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people just think, like, you know, what it means to be a man in America, it's always been the same, and it's the same everywhere you go, and it was the same in the 1800s as it is now, but it's not true. And so yeah, we'll explore, you know, the history of masculinity, what it means to be a man. But we try to do it in a way where, you know, I'm not trying to be controversial. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people just, they like to do that. They like to get in the flame wars with feminists and whatever. And that's just not my style, because I don't think it's productive at all. I mean, like, what we're trying to do in the Art of Manliness is bring back this, what I call as a classical ideal of manliness. What I mean by that is the idea of manliness that that started with the ancient Greeks, the ancient Romans, and really was with us in the West until about the 1950s, 1960s, when a lot of the the social changes we had during that time. And what I mean by the classical idea of manliness is, you know, if you asked someone like on the street, like what in ancient Rome or even in America in the 17th, you know, the 18th century, or someone in the 19th century, like, what does manliness mean to you? And they would say things like, oh, well, being a man, or manliness means, you know, being a man of virtue, means being, you know, having strength, having, you know, not just physical strength, but also moral and intellectual strength, courage. Means having honor. It means being industrious. It means providing and contributing. That was another important. Like, it was being a man in ancient Rome, and even in America until, you know, fairly recently, being a man meant you had to contribute to society. You had to be engaged in the public sphere and not think only about yourself. And to me, that tastes good. That idea of manliness. And now when you ask what, you know, guys, like, what does it mean to be manly? Like, they'll say dumb stuff like, oh, being manly means like sports and playing video games and like eating meat. And it's very, manliness in today is very self-centered, I feel like, very narcissistic. And so we're trying to bring, kind of revive this idea of manliness being something more positive, mm-hmm. Instead of sort of the, what we sort of the, I guess it's more cartoonish what we have today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the media narrative around it is really, you know, what drives so much of it to be what it is today.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, that's a big problem. And we've addressed that a few times on the site. What I think is interesting is, since I've started the site, it's been interesting to see how much manliness is like in the media, right? And how, like, what's wrong with men, what's going on with men, and why are men this way? And then, like, you're seeing, you know, even sitcoms that are like just about men. You're seeing like this whole, like, there's like, it's just like businesses that are geared towards sort of like this whole manly man thing. Like, there's like mustache waxes and like, you know, workwear and like, you know, I don't know, it's just like, it's crazy what's happened. I mean, manliness, so the idea of manliness has been in the spotlight for the past 5 or 6 years. So it's been interesting. I think there's, you know, as always with anything in the popular media, I mean, there's going to be a lot of silliness, but I do think there's been some good stuff from that. I mean, here's a perfect example. One thing we've talked about on the site is that, in the media, men are often portrayed as sort of these buffoons that can't do anything, mm-hmm. right? You see it in commercials and in sitcoms. But I've been pleased to see is like television shows that portray men in very positive ways. And like one of my all-time favorite TV shows, was Friday Night Lights.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just an awesome show. Cause it was just about, yeah. I mean, it was the football show, not about football. And it was just, I think it gave such great examples of men, young men and men trying to do the right thing.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I just love it. I mean, Coach Taylor is the most, I want him to like be my coach. Yeah. I want to meet Coach Taylor. And it was just great to see the other male characters in that show, struggling, right, with problems and issues, but trying to figure out, you know, in the end, like how to be the best man they can be. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I love that you brought up Coach Taylor. It's funny. I think I remember reading somewhere, it might have been an interview, on this show called Off Camera, where, you know, somebody was interviewing Michael B. Jordan, the guy who plays Vince Howard, and he was saying, you know, he's like Coach Taylor, basically. He's like, not only is he everybody's coach, you know, not the guy everybody wants as their coach, but like every woman wants that guy as their husband.
Yeah.
There's something about him that really, I mean, you're right. I mean, he like that, you know, if that is how you are portrayed as a man, you'd be like, you know, that's something I'd be completely proud of and completely okay with.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, yeah, what's amazing, what I love about Coach Taylor is like, he doesn't have it figured out. Right. Mm-hmm. Like there's been those moments where it's just like, he doesn't know what to do with his, like, you know, his kids and like these, you know, his football players that have these problems, but, he's got like this moral code, right, that he follows and he sticks to it no matter what. And he definitely has like a, I mean, he has a confidence. I mean, he at times is unsure, or maybe he feels a bit of fear, but he has like this confidence in himself and in those principles that if he just puts his confidence in those, like everything will be okay, no matter however it turns out. I think, yeah, men want that, like respect that. And like women, I find that attractive because there's not a lot of guys like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that the remainder of the media narrative causes you to take that too far, like in the wrong direction almost.
How do you mean by that?
Well, I guess, you know, like you said that he's confident, but there's a humility to him as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Like there's definitely a humble, like, I feel like a lot of young men, miss that. They just think like they have to be like alpha, which means mm-hmm. like you have to be this like confident or like not confident, it's like cocky, prick. Right. But I don't know. There's something about just like the quiet confidence that, I think is more, to me, more inspiring. yeah, just it's just definitely more inspiring.
Well, let me ask you this. On that note, I mean, how do we get back to that? You know, considering what we're seeing in the world around us, and you know, our media, our influences are constantly shaped by exactly what you're talking about, like bling and, you know, and crazy music videos and all that stuff. I mean, how do we get back to that sort of, you know, what you call it effectively the classical idea of manliness?
Well, I mean, I think one thing you can do is, I mean, like that's what we're trying to do on the site, is trying to help show people what they can do to have that. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, recognize it, right? Whenever you see a young man, right? That's why I think it's so important for, like, why mentors are so important. That's why we talked about on the site. Like, young men need that validation, right? That they're out, they're doing the right thing, and they need an older man to be like, yeah, that's, keep doing that. That's great what you're doing. Because right now, I think a lot of young men don't get that. And in the absence of that, they're just going to follow their peers and just do whatever their peers thinks is cool. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think you can do is just, I mean, like what we're trying to do, like look to the past, right? I mean, and I want to be upfront, like, you know, there's a lot of things about the past when it comes to masculinity that's not very positive. We don't look at the past with like rose tinted glasses for sure. But I think there's a lot to be learned from that, from the past. When it comes to being a man. So like study, you know, great men from history and see how they, grappled with problems and what they did in their development, into becoming men. And then also look at, you know, the mistakes that they made and see how you can learn from those mistakes. So, I mean, that's what I think you need, like mentorship, looking to the past and finding inspiration there. Mm-hmm. And, acknowledging, when young men, you know, when men do things that are right, like give them praise. I mean, that's one of the problems we have in our society today is that we often like, just like we often go after men when they're at their worst. But we hardly recognize when they do things that are positive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I mean, that's just, it's the nature of the beast, what the media is. Cause you know, it's the whole, if it bleeds, it leads thing. And negativity sells. But I think we need to counter that. So I don't know. I think if more people who tweeted or Facebooked or shared something about a story that of a man who did something, who kind of lived up to this classical ideal of manliness, that's awesome. That needs to be out there in front of people more often.
How can companies and organizations do unmistakable work? Well, there are a few ways, but it involves going outside the regular standard operating procedures, and that scares companies. In a culture of uniformity, it's intimidating to choose to stand out, but I really do believe that creativity is one of the most underutilized assets in most companies, and this puzzles me because creativity applied in business directly translates into innovation. Speaking is one of the few avenues where I get to share these ideas in person rather than online. Think my message might be a good fit for your event or organization? Get in touch at unmistakablecreative.com/speak. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/speaking.
Yeah, you know, I really appreciate that you're bringing this perspective to us. It's one that, you know, it's a refreshing one because I think that you're right. I think the implications for it and the byproducts of it, they seem like they would only be positive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I that's what I think. So,
yeah. Well, talk to me about, I mean, have you had stories of people who've been transformed as a byproduct of the site? Like, I mean, you've seen people go from like an evolution of their own. And I mean, for you, have there been molding moments throughout this entire journey of building this?
Okay. Well, to that first question. Yeah. I mean, that's the best thing about running the site. I mean, that's like, it's what we I mean, that makes our day, makes our week, makes our month. Whenever we get letters, I mean, people handwrite us letters.
Wow.
Telling us how the site has changed their life. And it's amazing that every story is different, but they all sort of had the same, you know, outline, right? Like guys who just, they were in the lowest of the lows, right? Maybe they got dumped. Maybe they lost their job. They had a dad that died. And we had, you know, a young man who, you know, they got diagnosed with cancer and, you know, their dreams of doing something were just totally taken away from them. And they just felt like they weren't capable of doing anything great. And they're just in the dumps. And then they find the site somehow, right? And they start reading it. And they just talk about how it's changed their life, like just doing small things that we recommend on a regular basis, just helped them get out of that hole, and gave them the motivation, the tools they could that they needed to build a better life for themselves. So yeah, we get that all the time. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, that's why you do it. That's why we're doing it. Help men out there become the best men they can be. I got this like giant folder full of all these letters. Mm-hmm. And as far as me as it goes for me, yeah, I mean, definitely, it's molded me. In the silly sense, I've learned lots of skills because of the blog, because if I was going to write about it, I had to know how to do it. So sure. I had to go out and learn it. So, you know, I've learned how to do all sorts of cool, manly things because of it. But, on a more serious note, you can't help, to be a better man after reading biographies of, you know, just really great men doing just good things, in their own lives and for their community around them, and then writing about it, and then writing about how, you know, just principles to live by. You know, you want to, you know, if you write about it, you want to do your best to live by it. And so, it's definitely shaped me into a better man, because, like, you know, you want to be, it really holds you accountable. Mm-hmm. With your behavior when you're out there researching and writing about that, because you don't want to be a hypocrite, right? It's not to say that I'm like this paragon of manly virtue, right? I mean, it's a process that I'm on the trail and journey with everyone else. But it definitely has helped me become a better man.
You know, so a question comes to me from that. It, you know, I love that you have people who handwrite letters to you. I think that's incredible. In an increasingly noisy and crazy world in which everybody is addicted to their smartphones. I guess for me, the question that comes from that is, I mean, how do you create that kind of a connection with your art? Like, how do you develop that connection with the receiver? Whether it's through a book, whether it's through a movie, I mean, what is it about, you know, art that creates that? And how is that something we can do? Does it come from a place of intention? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, for starters, like that's our contact form. Like, if people want to reach us, they can tweet us or write us a letter. I used to have an email contact form, but it just basically got spammed with PR pitches and mm-hmm. just crazy people complaining about weird stuff on our site. I mean, and so I was like, you know, if you want to reach me, write me a letter. And what's funny, since we've done that about over a year ago, uh-huh. like the crazy rant complaints, like they've disappeared. Like, I think I've gotten like one like letter where some guy, you know, wanted to tell me off about something that I wrote. But all the letters, I mean, I get letters every week. I love going into my PO box and pulling out, you know, 10 letters, and it's just like, they're thank you letters, thank you cards. So I think it's really interesting about human nature. Maybe, you know, this sort of interests your readers. You know, I think anger is such a, like a spur of the moment emotion. Like, mm-hmm. you feel that anger, and like, you feel like you have to act right now. I gotta tweet this out. I'm so angry. Look what these people did. Oh, I gotta share this on Facebook. Look what these people did. I gotta write them a letter. I hate what they did. I'm gonna send them an email. but like, when you put this barrier between people, like, where, oh, you have to like bring out, you have to get a piece of paper, to get an envelope. Oh crap, I gotta go to the post office and buy a stamp. They soon realize, oh, what I'm angry about is actually not that important. And they don't do it. But the people who like feel positive, right? They genuinely, they're grateful. Like, they're willing to make that effort. Uh-huh. Positivity. I don't know. It's something. I guess it produces more sustained effort, and negativity gives you sort of this like spur of the moment motivation that dissipates very quickly if you don't act on it while you're angry.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, it's just what compels people to write thank you letters, we try to be as useful as possible, with our blog posts, right? I don't post babes of the day or like galleries of like chicks in yoga pants, that I know a lot of men's websites do. Like I want to make these guys' lives better, in any small way. And so, yeah, I mean, I think if you try to help people, they're going to say thank you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a lot of women who read your site too, right?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I'd say about 20% of our readership is women. And a lot of it, it's like women who like share the site. Then they go on to share the site with their boyfriends or their husbands or their brothers. So like, wow, this is a great men's magazine. Like, you know, it's not like your typical FHM or Maxim. Mm-hmm. It's actually great stuff here. And I also think, women are interested in something. It's weird. Like, I think women are very intrigued by like the world of men.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, it doesn't go both ways. it's kind of weird. Like, I know women will like read Esquire or GQ. I know who like women who are fans of that magazine, but like, I don't know many guys who would like read Cosmo or like Women's Day. It's kind of interesting. I don't know. I don't know what goes on there, but yeah. About 20%, 20-25% of our readership is women, which is okay with me.
Well, let me ask you this, and we'll start wrapping things up because I know you got to get going here. One of the things that's interesting is, I mean, you're playing this game on a whole other level. I mean, at this point, you're probably in the league of many of these men's magazines. And I mean, effectively, you're running like what is a massive media brand. And I'm very curious kind of, you know, what are the challenges that have come with that? I mean, and what are the opportunities that have showed up as a byproduct of that? I mean, obviously, sounds like this has been life-changing for you, and it started really just out of passion, not with the idea that it was going to turn into this.
Yeah, that's a great question. So challenges, I mean, yeah, that's what I think a lot of people fail to understand is like whenever you have success, people always think about the benefits, like, oh yeah, I reached my goal. Oh wow, look, I can, but they don't think about like the problems or challenges that success bring. They never prepare for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely been there. So like, you know, just growing this, you know, finding ways to sustain the site, because as you get, as a website gets bigger, like a lot of people don't know this when they start websites, like, you know, page views cost money. Like every time someone visits the site, like they're using your bandwidth.
Uh-huh.
And like, you know, when I first started out, I had the $10 a month Dreamhost, you know, thing. And that was great, you know, when you had, you know, a couple thousand page views a month. But then when you get slammed by Dig or like Reddit and like your site goes down for 2 days, that's no good. Like you can't have that happen. So you have to keep continuously, as our site has gotten bigger, we've had to upgrade servers and, you know, increase our bandwidth to accommodate the traffic. So that's been a challenge that I didn't think about before. Other challenges as you get bigger is, you're presented with opportunities. Like people want more of you. Like they see that you have this like audience, right? Like particularly advertisers and PR agencies, and then just anybody who has a business, they're like, they want some in on the action.
Mm-hmm.
Which I understand, like, right. We have this, like we have a very passionate, engaged audience. You would love to have your product or service featured in front of them. But we have to be careful because like we are very protective of our readers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't, you know, we're not going to throw up just random advertorials, of some product or, you know, shill things like we don't really believe in. Having just to deal with that, like, you know, knowing, yeah, just like that, walking that fine line of, you know, we got to support the site. We got to, you know, help. You got to have pay the bills, keep the lights on. So we need advertising, but to do it in a way that's not obtrusive, that's transparent, and all that. So that's a challenge. And then the other challenge too, as you get bigger, yeah, more opportunities come your way and people are like, yeah, you should do this. You should go in this direction. And there's always this temptation to like, I'm going to blow this up. I'm going to like, I'm going to, besides the blog, I'm going to have like a clothing line. I'm going to have, you know, a man convention. I'm going to have like man classes. There's that temptation. We've had this conversation and I don't think we always say no, because I think it would take us away from what we're really good at, which is producing just content that's useful for guys. Even though, you know, we have people like, you need to have like a Art of Manliness convention. I don't think I would do a great job at it. Uh-huh. And I think it would be a distraction, because I've known people who put on conventions or whatever, and they said like it just consumes your life
I can tell you firsthand. I'm in the process of it right now.
there you go. So that's the challenge. That's another challenge we have. And just opportunities are great. I mean, I've had the opportunity to like talk to cool people just learn new things. It's a dream job, right? Mm-hmm. To do what I do, and I try not to take it for granted ever. There's that.
Well, you know, I think, this is really interesting, because I mean, what I am getting, it's funny because it brings us sort of full circle to, you know, the moral code that we talked about when we were talking about Coach Taylor. And I feel like that's an undertone throughout everything that you do. Like, there is a moral code and you abide by it, and there's no exceptions to it.
Yeah. I mean, we do our best to do that. And you just have to constantly keep reminding. And it's tough, because like sometimes you're like given opportunities where you're like, wow, that's a lot of money. Like, I've probably turned down tens of thousands of dollars, maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of advertising opportunities, because it just didn't fit my brand and I didn't feel comfortable with it. Would that extra money would have been nice? Of course. What we're doing on the site, right, is more important than that money. Mm-hmm.
Well, I love that, and I really appreciate your commitment to it. I mean, it's one of those. I mean, that's been me. I've turned down guests and scrapped interviews in order to maintain that level of integrity, at least with the show, to say, okay, you know what, this just isn't up to snuff, and I'm not going to publish it, or I will scrap it and say sorry, it won't work. I've even turned down some very, very prominent guests because I was like, you're not in line with our mission.
Yeah. And that's hard to do. That's mm-hmm. really hard to do.
Because I mean, we would see a big spike if we had them.
Oh yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, you could do a lot of things, right? And we've seen that on our own side. Like, I know, I mean, there's things we could do to like spike our traffic mm-hmm. easily. But you have to think the long game. That's what we're trying to do. We're thinking the long game.
Well, I love that. I mean, I love that it's so, there's more to me. This is really about building a legacy of manliness rather than a sort of, one hit wonder or sort of trendy couple of years, but something that has a legacy. So, Brett, I know you got to get going. So I am going to close with my final question. Sure. You and I spoke 5 years ago, and the world, maybe not 5 years ago, but like almost 3 years ago when you were, with us when it was called Blogcast FM, and the world has become so much noisier than it was when, you started, when I started. And, the more I think about it, the more I feel that having an unmistakable signature is the key to actually, standing out above the noise. So, I'd like to ask you, based on your own experience in this kind of world, how do you become unmistakable?
Well, for us, it's just putting in effort and like being, I think going for depth, I think makes you unmistakable in a world that's very shallow, particularly on the online world, right? Where it's just like memes and like, just like really just, 2 minute YouTube videos, or that's most content online. And I think if you go in depth and be thorough, that will set you apart from probably 95% of the content out there. So there's our thing, but like be in depth, be thorough, and have a purpose. Mm-hmm.
Well, Brett, this has been really, really great. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us. It's great to have you back a second time and really hear kind of how much has changed. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our listeners here at Unmistakable Creative.
Hey, thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those of you listening, we'll close the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming. Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.